The Nuggets bounce back with a win versus the Pelicans. Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double. Jamal Murray is looking better and better. Michael Porter Jr. had one of his best games, I thought, of the season on both ends in terms of complete game. Oh, by the way, Bones Highland's probably getting traded. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us and being part of the community and making us your first listen on whatever platform you're joining us, whether you're listening to us on podcast form on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast app, or if you're joining the show live on YouTube, where you can join the show, be part of the conversation in the chat as we do the show daily. Today's show is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, joined by Adam Mares. He's director of content for DMVR. We can catch the pre and post game shows before every Nuggets game, as well as all their awesome content. And check out their merch. Brendan Vogt was rocking the DMVR hat yesterday, and I was like, I gotta get one of those hats. Those hats are absolutely phenomenal. On today's show, we're going to recap the win versus the Pelicans. A really fun game. It was a late game, and I was exhausted, and I had a headache, and I was like, maybe I can just get out of here at half if the Nuggets are taking care of business. And then I'm really glad I stayed, because it was a really cool win to watch, and Jokic made some just sick, sick plays in that game. We'll talk about that. Plus, we're going to spend 2 segments on the Bones situation, because on Monday, we were like, I don't think he's getting traded. And 2 days later, Adam and I are like, oh, he's definitely getting traded. Probably. Maybe. Probably, definitely. So we're going to talk about all that and more on today's show. But we start with a win over the New Orleans Pelicans. So the Nuggets come out in this game. They looked like a team that had just come off of a road trip. They were sloppy. Jamal really hammered the turnovers in the first half. He's like, we were telling them, turn the ball over and giving them energy. He's like, this is a team that's lost eight in a row. You can't turn the ball over versus a team like that. They're just going to run it down your throat. So the Pelicans, I thought, played well. They generated good shots. The Nuggets defense was a mess in the first half. And credit to the starters. They get a lot of the credit anyway. But in this one in particular, after a disastrous bench stretch, the starters came back in and started to reestablish order. Jokic really took over in that late second quarter. Jamal Murray was phenomenal, I thought, in this game. Jamal finishes with 32 points on 10 of 21, 7 threes. He took 12, 5 boards, 6 assists for Jamal. I thought he played absolutely awesome. I mentioned Michael Porter Jr. This one, from the stats perspective, isn't going to stand out with 13 points on 12 shots. I loved how MPJ played in this game. Just like intensity, effort plays. He did lots of little things. His contest late on Larry Nance Jr. was big. Rebounded the ball. I thought MPJ was really good in this game. And then Joker. Adam, I want to just ask you, what was your favorite Joker highlight of the night? Was it the Hezzy?
Man, that one was fun. I will say it is the funniest highlight. That live, it was a 10 out of 10. I was blown away at how crazy of a move it was. He burned everybody, got them jumping the wrong way. The replay kind of looks lame. Not that impressive. I think it was just so shocking live is what made it look so good. But when you watch the replay, you're kind of like, all right, nothing looks cool when Jokic does it like that. I don't know. It was a great game. Jokic obviously looked comfortable. I mean, he looked dominant in the game. And the interesting stuff to me, you know, Murray was also fantastic. I mean, I also have to shout him out because 7 of 12 from the 3-point line. He was asked after the game if he was made a conscious decision to be more shot ready. He said no. And it drives me nuts because to me, the difference, Jamal always makes the tough shots. He doesn't always take the easy ones. And I just feel like last night he took the easy ones, made the tough ones as well, and he gets to 30 points. It's like the difference between his 20-point games and his 30-point games is he just seems to be more ready and locked in on the easy buckets. So I was almost annoyed that he answered that one the way he did. But I thought he was fantastic in this game. And when those two guys are just like A or B version of themselves, the Nuggets usually win. And then, of course, you got great contributions from other guys as well.
Yeah, I thought it was a good bounce back. I really tried in the to ask them about the second half, because the third quarter, Malone credited as one of their best third quarters of the season. And to me, it was an illustration that when this team controls the things that they can control, there's just not a lot of teams that can beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I think that that list is very, very, very small if they control the things that they can control. Because to me, they locked in. They knew what they needed to do. They came out in the second half, and they really like it. It wasn't like they came out with ferocious energy. They stopped screwing around. And like Jamal hinted at that last night about like, you know, look, this team's hungry and this team's got some guys and all that. But like we focused in and did what we need to do. And like they're hesitant to give themselves too much credit, which I think is a testament to them. Like I'm desperate to get them to credit themselves in these post-game pressers, and they won't bite. Like they just will not, which I think is a good thing. But I keep trying to get them to be like, yeah, we know what we're capable of, or yeah, this team's really good, or just like something. And instead it's just like, yeah, no, we won. Like
I'm glad though, to be honest, Matt, because coming off of Saturday's loss, I just don't think it's the time for the bravado. So I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Like to me, it was a good win against a team that's lost now 9 straight. So I think it's hard. Here's the thing. The starters were more dominant than it appeared in this game. I mean, they were all plus 20 or near it. And they should be against a team like that. The only reason the game was a little bit close is they had a horrible 4-minute stretch that allowed them to fall behind by 10 or 12 points, whatever it was. But I don't think that this is the type of game where you should read too much into how good or not good Denver is.
Zamora asked, did anybody ask Jokic about his backboard pass? Yeah, he jokingly was like, of course it was a pass. Like he was in a really funny mood last night. I wouldn't say like a playful, happy mood, but he was just like funny. The funniest moment from the Jokic presser was when Vinny Benedetto from the Denver Gazette said, you're now averaging a triple double, and Jokic did pan. Ooh, the room just cracked up. It was really funny.
Can I tell you something? He's averaging a triple double, and it's on 70% true shooting, which is absolutely absurd. We all know his numbers are always crazy. And in a season of crazy numbers, that is arguably the craziest triple-double on 70% true shooting. Do you think that's the craziest number? Like, Embiid's averaging 34 points per game, which is an absurd number. Like, you know, there's some of these crazy ones. Do you think that one is the craziest?
Of what? Sorry.
Just of all the individual stats that are outliers. Because this is an outlier season statistically.
It is.
Triple-double on 70% true shooting, the craziest outlier.
I think you have to include his usage rate is part of my thing. The efficiency leads to that, but this is a lot of it is like, if you look at the usage rates for a lot of these guys at the top that are averaging 30 plus, it's just like 10 years ago, we've been like, what? And Joker's usage rate is still pretty moderate. And so it's like, and there's a tie between that, right? Like, well, yeah, you can average a triple double if your usage rate is low, if you shoot 70% from the field, but like the assists and rebounds, like the total efficiency is what really kind of matters to me.
And like, I think it's like the most efficient 20 point per game season in NBA history as well. Mm-hmm. And then when you say you also average a triple double on top of that, it's just crazy.
The numbers at this point are honestly, it's like they're a detriment because we can't.
I agree.
Like you can't, like nobody, they're not phasing anybody anymore. They're so good that nobody's like, oh, wow.
This happens, by the way, the 1960, was it 61-62 season where Oscar averaged a triple-double, mm-hmm. and Will averaged 50. Like, it's that one season where half of the NBA records took place in one season. This year, there's going to be a lot of other, you know, records or quasi-records that get set. And it's, I don't think a coincidence that it happens, you know, in the same year. But here was the thing I was going to ask, Matt. Everybody celebrated last night that he moved into averaging a triple-double. But it's not true. He actually just into a statistical roundup. He's actually one assist shy still of averaging a true triple-double. So it's like 9.98, I think. Here's the question. If he ended the season today or like this, where he was – yeah, but it's just off by a decimal, a hundredth of a decimal. That's the only thing he's off. Will that still count as averaging a triple-double?
It will count if the NBA stat site lists it as a triple-double.
I predict that's how it's going to end, just because it feels like the most Jokic way to end is if he has in 73 games, 729 assists. And it's like, yeah, we round up, but technically he was one shy.
Bench the second unit, we'll talk about this a lot in the second segment. Like, they bench Bones. They go with basically four defenders. They stagger KCP. We've talked about how much we like the KCP stagger. It happened because Jamal was cooking, and Malone said, if Jamal's got it going, I want to keep him hot. But, like, the KCP stagger is objectively better for them. Like, it's just objective. Like, it works. Bruce, KCP, Christian Brown is a phenomenal 1-2-3. That's a terrific 1-2-3. And it's going to struggle against teams that can score, that can reset their defense, because that unit will probably – it doesn't have a lot of shot creation. But the bench's formula is get stops, run. That's the – and, like, I think it'd be better if they had some sort of shot creation on the second unit, but they don't. So, like, this is a better option than the alternatives. And so ultimately, I think, like, there's something to probably be learned from that thought that they got good minutes.
Well, first of all, one reason I agree with you about the stagger, and I do want to talk more about this accidental stagger that I think worked. We always talk about identity, and that second unit that they rolled out there, to me, doesn't have an offensive identity. Like, I think it's going to be very volatile, but you know what their identity is? They're tough defensively. And sometimes it's just good to say, we're probably not going to score a bunch of points, but that other team's going to feel us for the next 6 minutes, and it's just going to be a grind.
Yep, I agree. Let's get into the Bones stuff. We'll take a break. We'll talk about the Bones situation. We'll get you the latest on what was reported, what we know, what we don't know, the ramifications. There's a lot to get through here as we continue on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I need to tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They've got so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. Download FanDuel now, and you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. Travis Kelce seems like a pretty good selection on that. You can also probably in the next coming days, they'll have win totals out shortly after the Super Bowl. So you can bet the over with the new coach, Sean Payton of the Denver Broncos. So that's exciting. The FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you can get your paid winnings instantly. Join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/lockedon to claim your no sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us and making us part of being part of the community. We appreciate you guys being with us. Oh boy, the trade talk in the comments is fun. GK says OG Van Vliet for Highland Zeke and two first rounders.
Let's do it, Matt. Call it in.
Hey, Masai Ujiri, who literally gets blood from stone. That's what an executive said this week, is like Masai always gets blood from stone. I heard that from a person. I don't think that they're gonna do OG Van Vliet for two first rounders, Zeke and Bones. Monday, you and I talked about it, and we're like, we don't think they're going to make a deal. Like, because I had heard, like, the market for Bones was, like, non-existent. Like, there's not a market. Like, nobody's going to give up much for him. It's like second rounders and, like, various pieces of non-influential stuff. And then 2 days later, you and I are completely flipped, and we're of the belief that Bones Highland is going to get traded. That's very likely to occur. And it seems like it has gone from, this piece doesn't fit and we have to maximize the window, to this is a chemistry issue. This guy's really unhappy and he has to get moved because of, like, the essentially the locker room situation with a player that is this unhappy. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's almost like feels like not on the Jay Crowder scale of how much is like this inevitable. It's like right just shy of that. But, I mean, you're talking about it during the broadcast last night. Chris Haynes is talking about it. Dan Van Gundy's talking about it.
Well, hang on. I want to be clear on what the Chris Haynes report was. One, that the Nuggets are open to moving him. And two, he spoke with – like, here's a good example of how this is going. Bones speaks to Haynes and says that he is open to being moved. gets benched, does not speak with media postgame.
Right.
So that's how that played out. I just want to lay that out there.
It just, like, it's so loud, you know, and I don't know that it's necessarily inevitable, but I mean, I would put all my money on it happening, but it just seems like more than anything, it's rare that these things become the conversation to the degree that they have. So that part of this is a little bit strange, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I guess that's the weirdest part of all of this is just how it went from, like, I could see it happening to, oh no, it feels like this is now an inevitability.
I think there's probably a correlated aspect to this where if we look at the timing, like what happened to change, like here's what happened is Bones was probably unhappy, but was willing to put up with it because he was like, well, you know, I'm here and I'm part of the team and we're winning. Even though like it was very, and like I've talked about this, like it's very clear, like it was very clear in Bones' answers to questions that he wouldn't mind an opportunity where he just got to basically be himself, make mistakes, low pressure, not have to worry about getting pulled. Like, this isn't bad. A lot of players are in low accountability situations. The entire Houston Rockets organization is in
a low accountability
situation. Do what?
Are you talking about last year?
No, this year.
Do you think he was in a low accountability situation this year?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying he wants a low accountability situation.
I don't even know if it's that he wants low account. I'm gonna stop there personally. He wants opportunity. I don't know, because I don't know if he thinks of like, oh man, it'd be great if I wasn't held accountable. Like,
no, what I'm saying is he wants the ability to play his game,
right,
and have the ball. He like does not play like playing off of Jamal. That's apparent. Like went on y'all, went to y'all and on DMVR and talked about that. Like there's this whole like. My point is not that Bones is trying to shuck accountability. My point is that the situation that he wants is a low accountability situation, even though he's not thinking of that in those terms. Does that make sense?
Okay, sure. I feel like unfair phrasing to me, but I nonetheless it's semantics. I know what you mean.
But anyway, what happened then was like then the reports came out because you had like Shams Charania reporting about it, Jake Fisher has reported about it, I've talked a little bit about it. Like you have all this conversation that erupts about that Bones is available, and oftentimes when a player hears like he can be traded for, then it's like, then why like then they're out, right? And that doesn't excuse it because like I think that he's handled this badly. I think he gotta be like, look, if I get traded, if I don't, I have to play well. Like I need to be here for the team. I need to support them, and I think he's. In a tough situation. I said this last night on Twitter. I think Bones is going to be a good player, might be a great player. I think he needs another 2-3 years of point guard seasoning. And then we're going to be like, oh, he got it. Like he gets it now. Yeah. Defensively. It's like, yeah, but is he ever going to be able to defend? Most of the guys in the NBA can't defend.
From the guard spot. Yeah, most guys can't.
Yeah. And so now the question just becomes about what do they get for him? Is there a return? I will say that, I could be wrong, but from what I've heard, the offers are bad enough that I would legitimately, because I would say this, if you call the bluff and you're just like, hey, we didn't get a good enough offer. Like you're on a rookie deal. You're a really talented player. We know how talented you are. The market did not reflect how talented you are. Then afterwards it's like, all right, you're not getting dealt at least for another 4 months. You're here.
It could, and this is why I say it's not inevitable, even though it does feel like Denver, I think it'd be the preference on all parties right now. There is a world in which you just say, we can't do it. We didn't get the thing. Like, there's no loss to us in not making this move. But at that point, you do just, in my opinion, almost have to move on from him. Like, it is like, okay, well, if we feel that our team had a better chance this year without him, then we just need to not play him. And I know that's a tough pill to swallow, but Denver might arrive there if they can't find the right deal.
Evan put this well in the comments. Malone has to bench him when he's bad, and Bones needs to play those minutes to grow, but the Nuggets can't let him.
That is the paradox.
This is a timeline issue. This is that like the Nuggets are not on that timeline. The Nuggets are on a timeline of now. They're not on a timeline in 3 to 4 years. You have to build a pipeline of young talent. This is like the other part of it is like you do need young talent on rookie contracts. You're not going to be able to sign guys. You have four guys making over $100 million on their deals. Like, they're not going to have the money. So you need guys like Bones.
Right.
But Bones needs more of an opportunity. Like, I understand Bones being – how is Bones going to learn from his mistakes and work through them if he can't – if he gets benched, if he gets pulled, if he's terrified of making mistakes? And, like, this has always been, like, the, you know, part of the criticism with Malone, which I don't think has necessarily ever been fair or accurate. But, like, the idea of, well, you got to let him make mistakes. Like, not on this team. Like, this team is not – this is not a – and, like, that's what I was trying to get to, the accountability thing. This is not a – yeah, no, you can make mistakes. It's fine. If we lose this game, it's okay. No, like, this team needs to get the number one seed. Like, they need home court. They need to put as many things in their column for advantages and winning a title as they can. And the minutes with Bones this year have simply been atrocious. And, like, you saw it last night. He's spinning into doubles and, like, firing up wild stuff. And then
I will say this. I do think that he's played this season below the standard that he should. Like, I think we're getting the worst version of Bones this season. Meaning, I think there is a scenario in which he was a more positive impact player this year than what he has been. Sometimes that's just the case. But for whatever reason, he is playing below the standard Denver needs. And equally as important, like I said, Denver needed an identity with that second unit, and I think they found one in this all-defensive lineup that really like, they make it tough for you to score. Bruce Brown, KCP, Christian Brown, Aaron Gordon is in a hell of a foursome defensively.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. I'm with you, and we talked about this we touched on in the first segment, like having the identity of just like, yeah, we're going to struggle to score, but you're not. Like, we are going to be able to challenge you at so many spots. There was a question in the comments. Nemanja asks, by the way, why was there no Zeke? I think a lot of it was like Larry Nance's physicality was giving Zeke some trouble. He
played so poorly. That's why there's no Zeke. I will say, I think another reason though, if you play an all defensive lineup, I know Malone likes having Jeff Green out there because he gives you an ISO option on offense. Is it a good option? Is it worth it? I don't know. But as a coach, I do think there's a security blanket to knowing when we come down the court this time, we can throw it into Jeff Green and play off of him in the post.
Yeah.
As opposed to if Zeke's out there, what are you counting on? Bruce Brown pick and roll, Christian Brown attacking off the dribble, things that are more chaotic and more uncomfortable as a coach.
Anthony says that defensive lineup will fold versus the Warriors. I don't agree. That's just flat up don't agree. They're going to be playing against a Warriors second unit for the most part. That is atrocious.
That features Steph, but that's the best lineup to play against Steph.
You want switchability. You want switchability to be able to track him. You want quick guards that can track him across multiple ones and call out switches that understand communication defensively. Mm-hmm. Like, I just totally disagree with that. They might struggle versus some of the bigger, more physical teams. A Lakers second unit would be very difficult given their size. Like, that could be some, although the Lakers tend to play small too. I think with Bones, I think we can kind of both agree that hasn't handled this well. I don't really expect him to. Like, I think
that's the thing is I can't be too upset with him.
Yeah, because I get it. I totally do. I get it. You know, and because a lot of this is if you have like the veterans in the locker room are always going to tell you like the stuff about like, hey, you need to do like, you need to sacrifice for the team and make sure that we're locked in. But like the number one thing they'll say is like, be out for yourself, get paid. Like that's the reality of the business. Bones' best path to getting paid is not, wow, he had a really great plus minus for a championship team. It's no, he's like a 19 points per game scorer.
I think that I, as much as I agree with you a lot, I do think that it's changed a little bit. I think there's a little bit more of an understanding of the league has just gotten a little bit smarter, but nonetheless, you're still right that Bones have it more than anything. It's development. It's less about what do you do in the short run. It's more about in 2 years time, can Bones be, where will Bones be if he's given the ability to kind of just play high volume, high shooting? I think he'll be a more developed player. That it's more of that.
Yeah, I've been trying to stress this all year because I've been critical of Bones like from the jump. That my thing has been just like he needs to play better, and not that like there are guys that I'm just like, I don't know if they're gonna make it in this league. Where I'm like, you are so bad and your instincts are so poor. Like the path between you and Nick Young is not wide. And Nick Young made some money in the league, right? But I don't see Bones like that. Like, I legitimately think that Bones, as he gets now, he's brash and he's fierce and he's confident. And
but he has a good feel for the game. Like he looks like a player that's going to grow into a very smart, talented, effective player.
Yeah. I think he's going to have a good career, and it's going to drive, I'll just tell you right now, if they trade him, it's going to drive Nuggets fans nuts. And it's going to be a constant, like, you know, well, you look back, I mean, they did this. The Nuggets caught grief for Malik Beasley, who is on.
Well, it's funny because I feel like Bones is a cross between Nurkic and Beasley, circumstantially. Yeah. He's almost like in between those two things.
Talk about that more.
Well, Nurkic, it came to a head. Everybody knew he was good, but you had to trade him. And then it sucked to watch him go somewhere, especially a division rival, and then be great. And I do wonder if there's a part of that. Like somebody was saying they heard a trade rumor with Phoenix as like a trade partner. It'd be interesting to see if Denver would make a trade like that, even if it was for good value. Would you trade him to Phoenix? Would you trade him to Utah if it was good value? A place where you're like, well, this could immediately haunt us.
I want him in the Eastern Conference.
Like, I wonder if he's good enough to warrant that. Like, I wonder if Denver views him as good enough to warrant that. If they're just like, we can't worry about those things. We're right there. And if that's the deal that we actually like, you know, that's the one that we get the piece back. I mean, for example, if you were able to make a trade with a Minnesota and get back one of their wings that seems to fit, would you do it knowing that you're going to have to face Bones four times a year for maybe for the next 5, 6, 7 years? I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah, I think it is tough. I do want to note that the Naz Reid stuff is, I was told, is nothing. That conversation has not taken place. So, like, the Naz Reid thing, I think, is a...
I never really liked the Naz Reid talk anyway. Like, that's not... If I were to target guys on Minnesota, Naz Reid would be, like, fourth or fifth.
I think if you're going to trade in the division, that Utah makes the most sense. I wouldn't mind seeing Vando come home. That wouldn't be...
Yeah.
I don't think that'd be the worst. Let's take a break. We'll talk about the outcomes. Let's talk about... you brought this up to us pre-game or pre-show. We'll talk about... What does the situation kind of say about the front office? And has this been handled well? We've talked about Bones, but how's this been handled by everybody else?
Want to ask one other question in that segment, and that is, how much did the Murray stagger lead us to this spot?
You out-teased my tease. Well done. Ah,
dang it.
No, that's a good. That's good. That was a great. You out-teased me.
There you go.
You tease-topped me. We'll talk about that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I've got to tell you about Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat and you don't want all the fat and calories, you got to try Built Bar. What makes Built so good? Well, for starters, they're all covered in 100% real chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. You know, I was in the kitchen yesterday and I was like, man, I just got done with a workout. And I was like, man, I haven't eaten anything today. And my wife was like, we have the Built Bars. That you sell them on the show every day. Go get them. And she, who does not listen to this show, mind you, she listens to Locked On Avalanche. Thanks, wife, was like, hey, did you know that they have 100% real chocolate? Even she knows how good Built Bars are. And they come in unbelievable flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, and coconut almond. I'm not sure how Built does it, but these bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining amazing macros. Only 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar with a whopping 17 grams of protein. You don't need to wait around anymore. Built Bars are now for sale at local Walmart or Sam's Club. That's right. You can go into Walmart and you pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, or the coconut puffs. And if you're close to Sam's Club, you can run in and grab a 13-bar box with our hit flavors, brownie batter, and churro. Churro is amazing. You can thank me later. Check them all out at built.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making this part of your day. Glad to have you with us. Appreciate you guys being with us on a Tuesday after the Nuggets win versus the Pelicans. Let's start by answering the question that Adam posed before the break. So, Adam, you asked, like, how much did the Murray stagger get us here? Your thoughts?
I do wonder, part of why I think that there is, like, a little bit of a Jokic-Nurk situation. Not one-to-one. I don't want to go too far with it. Is I do wonder, just like part of what needed to work out was Murray and Bones. Early on in the season, Michael Malone kept saying before, I thought Bones was good to start the year. Like he had some moments, even though the plus minus stuff was bad, he was making shots. He was dynamic. He was shooting 50% on volume from three or 40-something percent. He was doing some things. You know, he gets sick, he goes out. And by the time he comes back, Murray was healthy enough to start staggering with the bench. And he never played well after that. And again, as you mentioned in our conversations with him, he talked about he had a hard time specifically with Murray. When he's off ball, he's not sure what he's supposed to be doing. Am I just supposed to be in the corner? We obviously saw the opposite when sometimes when Bones was too aggressive and then Murray would just look like he was passive. Part of me wonders how much we got led here in part, not fully, in part because of trying to force a square peg into a round hole with that specific combo. And I just wonder if you have a player like Bones, is it better just to give him the defensive options, a KCP, Aaron Gordon stagger? We didn't really try that very much with Bones. And I just wonder if there was another configuration Denver could have gone to that maybe would have had a happier ending.
I agree. I never really liked the Jamal Bones combo. I feel like it plays into it. It makes part of this is it makes Jamal's life harder too, because Jamal not only has to kind of like navigate this and run this offense, but two, it makes it harder for him on the defensive side as well. Bones has to get the easiest defensive assignment. So then Jamal has to take a tougher one. You don't get to be like, okay, you're going to have to run this offense. So like you get to take breaks on defense. No, it's like now you get to play like top. You're playing starter minutes, so you're going to have tough matchups almost no matter what in those situations. And now in your second unit, you're also going to have a tougher matchup. Like that combo I thought was bad. The solution last year to a lot of the bench issues, one of the reasons they got better was moving Bones on ball, and Bones is better with the ball in his hands. Now, I think that his decision-making on the offensive end has been poor this year, from shot selection to when he's chosen to reject the screen, which is almost always, to like how he's just kind of operated things. The second unit needed more structure. And like a lot of this gets into like, well, yeah, but couldn't we point at the coaches? And I agree. Like, I don't think the coaching staff set up the second unit for success. Bones also just needed to be able to run like basic stuff. And he hasn't been able to effectively run basic stuff that, again, I will stress this, in 2 to 3 years, he will be able to. Bones in 2 to 3 years is going to be like, oh, okay, they're running drop here. Let's just set a screen. I'm going to get to the mid range, take a pull up, and I'll punish them. Then they'll have to come up and we'll run the pot. Like there's all these sequences you can run against bench units because they're not as athletic. They're not as capable. They're not as good. And Bones wasn't able to take advantage of those. The fact that the offense was so sloppy, that they gave up so many turnovers, which led to transition points, that so many possessions were just empty, either shot clock violations or 9-1-1 heaves or turnovers. Like a lot of that goes on Bones. But the idea that like Jamal was going to fix that, I thought I never really understood that concept. And I'm with you, like Bones, KCP, Bruce Brown. Hey, here's two top level defenders. They'll take care of the defensive side. And those two guys are veterans that will tell you like, hey, make sure that you're doing X, Y, and Z. Like put that with Vlatko and Zeke, or I guess Jeff and Zeke, and you know, see if you could do it. Like, do you lack rim gravity? Yes, but you make up for it with switchability on the defensive end. Now I will say like that first half stint last night, the Pelicans, like there was a sequence where Bones got lost 4 times. Like I watched the possession. He got lost 4 times on a single possession. The defense, there has to be a threshold of how bad you are. And Bones has dipped below that regularly this season. But I do kind of agree that a lot of this gets into the lineups that he was in.
There's a lesson to be learned in this, in that one, I predicted this coming into the season that Bones would be the fall guy when things went poorly, and that was going to be one of the obstacles. And I knew the range of outcomes went from, you know, you go through a rocky place and then he grows as a player and he grows into this or that. And one of the range of outcomes is obviously that it becomes like, okay, you have to trade this guy. But I think that this has kind of gone in such an extreme that it feels like Bones has become a depreciated asset when you talk about, you know, this or that. And to me, that has to be that's a thing that I think the entire organization has to sit back and look at. You can't do that. You can't have assets that lose value repeatedly. You know, you can't have that happen when you're trying to win a championship, because you have to squeeze every little bit of value out of everything you have. And so in that one way, I do look at things like, was the strategy correct trying to force those two guys to play together, and the bench constantly changing different guys. And we had the DeAndre Zeke didn't even play for the first 20 games. And then you bring in Christian Brown for a while, this or that. I do think there's a little bit of chaos that was thrown his direction, on top of the fact that he had so many lessons to learn that complicated things. And that would be my biggest critique, is there does feel like a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy with Bones this year of, man, he has a lot to learn, put him in the toughest spots, doesn't learn those lessons, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, the bar was high coming in. You were worried about it in preseason. Mohey says, Bones is the latest victim of Malone's bad in-game coaching, not the last one. Michael Malone doesn't make him take turning, spin around shots that don't even reach the rim. Malone doesn't make him throw turnover passes into double coverage. Like, you're looking up, but, like, Bones is just, like, his shot selection. Like, even guys that are supportive of Bones in-game, I'll look at them and they'll be like, what the was that? Like, there's a lot of that that goes into his game. And when he's hitting shots, it looks awesome. But, like, the player does have to play to a certain execution level. And you can't just take 35-footers and hope they go in. Like, that's just not a sustainable strategy, I think, in the NBA for most players. Like, Steph Curry is a great example of how much work goes into what makes Steph great. There was, like, a sequence yesterday where...
It should be noted, though. One thing I want to say is we haven't seen the bench unit look good offensively. When we talk about it's looked better in other configurations, it's because of the defense. But the offense has looked bad with a lot of – Bones was out for 2 weeks. The bench still got killed, and they couldn't score. Like, I just think that's important context for that second unit.
Let's talk about the way that this has kind of been handled from a broader perspective. And I think it's interesting that the change from Tim Connelly to Calvin Booth here, in that – when Calvin took over, one of the things that you and I said was this is probably, like, there are a lot of ways this is going to be good because he's going to be more aggressive and he's going to be less emotionally attached to the roster because, like, this team was Tim's baby. Like, developed all these guys, you know, made key moves, was really attached to certain dudes. And Calvin has been around and played in the league and he's comfortable with it being a business. I think you're seeing some of, like, the other side of this where – when players have started to get unhappy in the past, the Nuggets were able to kind of reel them in and keep them connected. And one of the things that I asked Murray last night about kind of one of the credits for Malone about, you know, with their success, about what he kind of ascribed to him. And one of the things that he really talked about was the communication. He said, you know, he knows, like, he goes to guys and keeps them connected and keeps everybody on the same page. And so the fact that there's been these struggles here, I think extends not only, like, Malone can get his share of the blame. That's fine. He's the coach. But, like, front office also manages these relationships too. And it's very clear that Bones feels like the entire organization, not just Malone, but the entire organization does not have the level of support that he feels he deserves here.
Yeah. Again, it's so hard to speculate on, like, you know, It certainly feels that way. I 100% agree with you that that's how you get to a point where Bones is at the end of the bench and kind of sulking on the bench and posting things on Instagram and report from Chris Haynes. That's how you get to this point as a player feels alienated from the team. It's hard to know where the blame goes from that, but I will say that you're spot on, in my opinion, about the stylistic and personality difference between Tim Connelly and Calvin Booth. And I'm not even saying this is a value thing, which one is better. Because Tim Connelly, I think, was very good at fostering relationships with everybody, players, agent, everybody, fostering those relationships. And maybe it went too far and to be where he became so attached. And we know Tim didn't pull the trigger on trades. I mean, you talk about trading Bones too early. There were players like Malik Beasley, for example, who maybe got traded too late. Like, they had a point moment in time where it's like they actually had more value, held on for too long. Calvin definitely seems a little bit more... ruthless is the word everybody always says, but I honestly don't think it's ruthless. I think it's just more like he knows his goal and won't compromise the emotional aspect or relationships aspect for it. Like, no, we need to do this. And, like, matter of fact, just like, you know, this is how it works. Yeah. And there's pluses and minuses to both of those. But you are seeing the sort of the difference there.
I think a lot of the most successful GMs have taken that approach. Where it's
that's the Danny Ainge. Isn't that the Danny Ainge?
Danny Ainge and Daryl Morey are the two that come to mind. And, like, here's the thing. No one talks about those guys that know them personally like they're a-holes. That's not that's not how they come across. That's how they approach the business because it's a business. And that's like this, and this team, this is a really hyper-competitive one. You know, like, if you want to, like, a more lax environment, shouldn't be in it. And I'm not. So that's like, you know, I wouldn't last in the NBA because of that.
I will say this is a new test though for Calvin Booth. Like, he had a great offseason, I think.
Yep.
The KCP move looks brilliant. The Bruce Brown move looks brilliant. The Christian Brown draft pick, I think, looks brilliant. Peyton Watson, I'm still, like, skeptical of, but TBD, you know, that was always a long-term play. But this is a different type of transaction now. Trading a disgruntled young player, and what do you get from it? And if the report is true, you know, of a first-round pick or whatever, that's one that we won't really know for a long time. That's one that will take a really long time to be able to grade, but the early returns on it, I think, will be tough.
I think I'm still kind of an advocate that for the Nuggets to not do this deal.
Really?
There, yeah, a first round pick. I do, like, I get it, because it's like, look, you reset to zero. Like, all right, you had a first round pick, you spent it on Bones, that didn't work out. You get another first round pick, and you try again.
Right.
But I also think, like, your mindset has to be the window's open. We got to get it now.
The funny thing about that, though, man, is the question is does just losing him and going with the guys you already have, is that better?
Yeah.
And it might be.
I mean, that's the question, is like, is Bones going to be but here's my thing, is like, is Bones going to be disruptive to what's a generally pretty, I think, happy and good vibing locker room the rest of the way? Because, like, I think the players have frustrations with Bones, and that's apparent in some aspects when you watch them on the floor. But I think in large part, like, the players are also there. I think there's a widespread acknowledgement of, like, I get it. Like, I know what you're going through. Like, I get it. You're in trade rumors. You want a bigger role. This is tough. I get it. Like, until Bones makes it a problem, I don't think it'll be a problem. And if there's no recourse, if it's like, well, we didn't trade you, so you're going to be here.
Here's the thing I'll say, though, Matt. I don't think first-round pick – I get the idea that usually when you trade for first-round picks, you're in the Sam Presti stage of rebuilding. Yeah. Like, and I don't think that's the situation here. If you feel like you have a group that can do it now and you can get a first-round pick for trading him, I actually – Denver, every time we try to put a trade together, it's like, we don't have any picks to throw in, like this or that.
Yeah.
I do think there's something, too. You gain one. You either can use it because you're going to have to fill out your roster – and I do think Calvin Booth's first-round picks going forward are going to be more of the Christian Brown variety, meaning short runway, early impact, than of the Bones Highland. So there is value there. So I don't necessarily hate it.
Let's do, like, long-term scenario here.
This is an interesting one.
So Bruce gets a $20 million per year offer next year, like 3 years, 60.
20 seems so high for me, even for Bruce. I love Bruce, but that still feels high. But okay.
Or a Gary Harris deal, 3 years, just, 18.
Yeah, just do 15. Just do anything outside of Denver's grasp.
Outside Denver's range. Can't match it. Bruce is gone. You're like, it's okay. We've got Christian Brown. There's an injury in the front court next season that's going to miss more than a month. It's perfectly reasonable to happen. Not like a devastating one, not a season ender, but there's an injury that's going to keep one of the forwards out for an extended period of time, or one of the wings. Okay. All right. Now what? Now it's like, I guess we're moving Jeff to three, or Zeke if Jeff's around.
Yeah, like, I mean, first of all, you're adding players. Yeah. Every year you have your, like, exceptions to be able to use. So there's going to be another body. I think the broader point is, don't even think about injuries. Just think about the idea of you could trade Bones now is because you can stagger Jamal and you could play Bruce Brown alongside him as a sort of secondary ball handler. But if you're right, and I think you are, that Bruce Brown is likely gone next year, then you don't have a secondary ball handler off that second unit. So you have to bring one in off of your exceptions. There's not a good point guard offseason class. Do you draft one? Like, or then you're really shorthanded. Or
you package the first round pick that you got for Bones Highland to get one. Because you get through the season and you're like, we need another wing. And now you have a first rounder to use.
Right.
Right. But I will say this, like, and this is always a thing that I think really needs to get stressed more than it is in trade talks. Like, I reported this week that Charlotte's looking for a first rounder for Mason Plumlee, and everyone's like laughing their asses off about it. And I'm like, Charlotte's not like sitting here being like, you better give us a top 10 pick. No, like, Charlotte knows what they're getting. It's like a bottom five pick, but the value, like, a first rounder in the bottom five and a first rounder in 10 through 15 are not the same.
Right.
Right. There's approximate value of top five, top 10, 10 to 15, 15 to 20, 20 to 25.
Where's the pick for Bones where you feel good about it? Where does it have to be? Is it 24?
Yeah. That's my thing. I think, like, I would be targeting the teens. And that feels high, but there's a bunch of teams that have multiple picks in the teens.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of team that he needs to go to, too. I want to comment real quickly on this from Hurricane. I like how every young player who's value Malone's kill, there's a million excuses but no defense in the aggregate. Who? Malik Beasley was the one that everyone was like, they just gave away Malik Beasley. Sure, couldn't use him. Malik's on his third team now where he's being shopped aggressively.
It's so true. Like, this is the funny thing, is that he's not even on the team he was traded to. He's on a team he was traded to after he was traded. he spent some time in jail in between there. Like, it is unfair. And also, that's the point. This is why I said he's like part Nurkic, part Beasley, in that Beasley was a good player. You knew he was going to be a good player. That runway took several years and continues to have ups and downs to it.
The Blazers are trying to move Yusuf Nurkic. Orlando is, you'll notice that Bulls prominence has kind of like slipped a little bit here. And there's not like a lot of like, oh yeah, no, we think Bull is part of the future. That's not the conversation in Orlando. Like, that's just not the conversation. So like, when we talk about all these young players, who are we talking about?
I'm telling you, it's when you're a good team, you lose the Beasleys and the Bulls and the Vandos. And those are good players. It's just that they needed a long runway. And again, Vando's been traded. Beasley's been traded since being traded from Denver. So part of me is just, I get the frustration, but I also, the longer I cover this league, the more I realize, I mean, there's a reason George Karl for years was always like, trade these young guys away. I think he goes too far with it, but the more you cover it, the more you realize that's just how Kuzel it works.
Says, I hate this crap, trading players for less than their max value because they're pouting due to two more years on his contract. Who cares if he's happy? Here's the answer, Kuzel, because that's a fair question, because this is how fans think, because here's the deal. You watch the 48 minutes that they're on the floor, okay? The players, front office, coaches, and staff live with the guy. They travel with him. He's on the – like, so having a person – and, like, the locker room does – and I know that you're going to be like, that's crazy. It's just like – again, this is another one of those NBA things where I'm like, I'm not debating with you the sanity of this. I am simply stating to you how it is. And when you have a guy that's just like actively unhappy, it does tend to sour the locker room. Everyone's just like having to deal with it, and it makes a deal. And I think that the Nuggets in general, like, because he's young, have really tried to be like supportive of him. The Nuggets are going to say nothing. The players are going to say nothing but nice things about Bones, and they'll mean it if he gets dealt. Like, they will be genuine. The only player I've ever really heard guys like talk badly about, like, it's very rare, but it's like Enes Kanter with Utah. Like, that's where it has to be like, right? And this is not that type of situation. But I think it is tough. Again, Evan puts this really well. You can't bench Bones because he'll tank his value, and you can't let him play with how he's playing. Lots of the outcomes if he stays are damaging both to the team and to him. It's true.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say, the final piece I'll say about this, trade deadline's not for another week. Actually, a little bit more than a week. A lot of the reports on all the players that are rumored right now, whether it's John Collins or whatever, the value sometimes matches these early reports, but oftentimes does not. So I would just say we keep talking about these things as if like the reports right now are exactly what you'll get. And they might be, but there's always a chance that a crazier deal happens than you anticipate, both better or worse.
They're all outdated is the other thing. Like, I don't know how many times I've called and been like, hey, I heard this thing. And they're like, yeah, that happened 2 months ago. Yeah. You know, oh, sorry. I just thought it was this week. Like, so like, and again, and things are happening as like conversations are occurring as we're recording this podcast. So someone may be like, hey, this guy's shooting percentage is actually really good. There's definitely something there. This is like a lot, like we have the opportunity, especially these teams that have all these picks, I think have this kind of opportunity. I think it's why Utah makes a lot of sense is like, oh, you know, they have the assets to burn one and still have a deep cache of assets. Yeah. The Pelicans, I heard, are one team that is a little bit interested. I think they actually have some players that are interesting.
They have a lot of players. They're a rare example of a team with too many wings.
And they have bigs like Jackson Hayes is available for talks. So like, that's an option. So we'll see. Maybe the Nuggets are able to get great return on Bones and put him somewhere where he can succeed. Maybe he gets dealt to Phoenix for, you know, a protected first rounder, and it's a deal that nobody's happy with.
I'm telling you, don't send him to the Suns, the Lakers.
Do not send him to the Lakers. That would be one that I would be like, under no circumstances.
I mean, Lakers don't have anything to give, but exactly. Nonetheless.
So. All right, this show's gone long, but I think it was a good one. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you have yourselves a great week. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. We'll talk about getting ready for the Warriors game, a huge game on Thursday. We'll talk about that tomorrow a little bit, as well as whatever else happens at the trade deadline tomorrow here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys again next time.